That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events, such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paul, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And if
there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven yep. science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Coming to you live from our houses in Los Angeles, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Tonight, grocery stores. Right now, it's about the only place we go outside our homes. But how do they really work? What's life like behind the wall of milk and cheese and boxes of muffins? And why does everybody need so much butter? We've got Raymond on the phone. Raymond's worked in a grocery store for 14 years, and he'll pull back the freezer lid to uncover the truth about your grocery store's frozen peas and Q's. Plus, an eighth grader named Nate asked us for help with the math he's learning at home. In this week's Quarantine Corner, we'll tell you everything we remember from math in eighth grade. Good luck, Nate, and hope that your parents are grading on the curve. I'm Adam Felber, the man who every week tries to keep our discourse stocked with topics that sit on the same conversational shelf. And now, please welcome the woman who routinely knocks over the stacked cans of this show's coherency. Shoppers beware, we have irrelevance all over aisle 8. Paula Poundstone!
Hey! How are you guys?
Welcome, Paula.
Oh, it's so lovely to be here. I just want you to know that I am once again recording, sitting on my treadmill desk, which if it gets turned on, I am flying through the closet door.
I keep wondering what that might sound like. So at this point, you know, I'm bored enough in quarantine that I'm almost hoping that it happens, Paula.
Yeah. I kind of like to see what, I've been trying to train my dogs to walk on the treadmill, by the way. And I think they've seen one spill too many on my part. And they're like, no way, we're not doing that.
Well, I want to welcome tonight's house band. Can I do that?
Yes, please.
Tonight's house band is on the tuba, Adam Sartain.
Nice.
From Hollywood, California.
Yeah.
He's a nobody. He's happy to be here, or virtually here. And speaking of here, where are we all coming from? Paula, we know you're on your treadmill. Is it inside or out?
Oh, inside. I have an inside treadmill.
Nice.
That's why I'm using my inside voice. And Tony Anita Hall, where are you?
I'm standing in my kitchen.
Standing?
Now, Tony, so our new listeners know you live in a studio apartment. And as we've talked about before, your kitchen is, adjacent or perhaps in your office. Because the office is really just that little piece of formica that comes out of the wall where the phone hookup is. Is that true, Polly Pocket?
That is correct.
So, Tony, in fact, you're standing in your kitchen, but if you were sitting down, you'd be in your office.
That is, yep, absolutely. That's true. That's very true.
That's why Tony is ingeniously marketing during the pandemic. Tony is ingeniously marketing the wire whisk / pencil for
it's a great item. You can whisk or you can write.
Yeah,
and just by turning it around.
And you can reach both rooms from the same chair. Well, we're so glad you're here, Tony.
Thank you.
And Bonnie Burns.
Bonnie Burns, where are you coming from? Captain Crinkle.
I have moved. I've moved rooms.
Oh, wow.
No. I'm not on the couch anymore.
Where are you?
Where are you?
I have moved into my office.
You don't have an office.
You have an office?
I do.
No. You know what?
It's out with the lawn furniture.
Bonnie is riding up front on a covered wagon right now.
Heading westward, even though there's not a lot of west from Bonnie's house.
Yeah, but it's slow going. She's.
No, I'm in my office, Paula. Which you've never seen. It's completely puzzled the dogs because they're used to cuddling up on the couch with me, and they just come in the room. They stand there, and they just like, what are we supposed to do?
Oh, yeah. There's nowhere to cuddle. So that would imply that you don't use the office hardly at all.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're all here.
Yeah.
You know what? So the other day I was just, you know, dealing with life how we all are right now, right? You know, bleaching and vacuuming and not going out and, you know, canceling, postponing more dates and just doing my, you know, just working hard. And, you know, because we keep a list of things to do every day and we, you know, I crack the whip. We get stuff done here. So, but I'm in my room and my
You and your cats, you mean?
My daughter's living with me now, my middle daughter. Okay. So she comes in and she says, Mom, there's bugs in the kitchen. And I go into the kitchen. You guys remember I've showed you pictures before and we've talked about my termite infestation?
Yes.
Okay. This was that like a million times. So
it was
in,
like a Civil War battlefield of dead termites on the floor.
They weren't dead. There were like thousands of them. They were on the floor in the kitchen. They were on the wall behind the refrigerator. And I can only see like about a 2-inch span of that wall between the refrigerator and the counter. And so at first I'm like, I have no idea what to do. And then I go and I grab the vacuum cleaner and I start hosing them up. I had to empty the vacuum cleaner canister 3 times. And I'm hosing and hosing. And then I would be doing the floor. And then I turned back around, and where I had just vacuumed from the wall, there was a million more there. It was like, I mean, I no disrespect to Vietnam veterans, but it was like numb. It's like I'd be on one side, and they're over there, and then get them over there. And then I turned back around, and we moved. I said, you know, I think they're coming from behind the refrigerator. Because I could never
That's some good reasoning.
Follow their trajectory. I couldn't see exactly where they were coming from. But so pull out the refrigerator, right? Like, pull out the refrigerator. And I can't see very well. And I'm like, you know, I don't know. There's like brown stuff down there. What is that? You know what the brown things were?
More termites or sawdust?
Termite mounds. Like I saw in Africa, there were termite mounds. The only difference was...
Oh, my God.
Some of these, they weren't pretty like the Africa ones. These were like a really gross, dark brown color. And inside on the walls, there were K-pop posters because a lot of my termites are young. And it was so
Wait, a
horrendous.
Lot of your termites are what?
Young.
Oh, nymphs.
Yeah. Young termites. They like the K-pop. Yeah. That's what they like.
That's what they like.
Yeah. So I vacuum up all the termites. It was so unbelievable. And you know, as it is, every day I'm on the verge of just Snoopy crying from stress and from, you know, what's happening in the world. But this was just like, you know, you remember Snoopy crying.
Yeah. That's why I was laughing.
You absolutely
throws back his head and wails.
Yeah. I feel like doing that all the time. But you add my normal stress, like take my normal stress and add in millions of termites to the degree that I'm like, and then I thought they were in my bathroom at one point because I kept finding them on my bathroom floor. And then I realized, no, they're dropping off my clothing. When I would sit down to use the toilet, they would fall off of me.
You know how you can tell if they've been in your bathroom? Tiny bottles of Axe body spray.
Yeah. Yeah. And just the water running constantly because they want to live through this pandemic. So they're in there washing their hands. I go in and the hand soap is like half down from where it was before. And I realize it's the goddamn termites. This is how long they leave it on. That's it. That's all it takes to wash a termite's hand.
That's as long as it takes to sing happy birthday in termite language.
Yeah. Well, because they're born so quickly. There's no time to finish one song before another one's born. Happy birth.
Absolutely.
Oh, happy birth.
Happy birth.
My God. What? Termite mounds behind my refrigerator.
Now, you're going to need an exterminator out there, Paula.
You know,
I mean, I don't know a lot about termites, but if they're building mounds behind the refrigerator, they're probably in your walls, too.
Yeah, no doubt. But, you know, the idea that my house would be tented now, I mean, the irony is I may have to move to a tent eventually, and I'd like to hold out on that.
Well, that is bad news.
In literature, they call that foreshadowing. Adam.
Yes, what?
I have a word.
You do?
I do.
I'm not surprised. You have had a word for us every week for about the last year.
Yeah, but during the crisis, Adam, you know, the world's changing. This week's word is insuperable. It's
insuperable?
Insuperable.
Oh.
It's an adjective that means impossible to overcome. Here, I'll use it in a sentence. My termite invasion was nearly insuperable. Yeah, it was nearly. It wasn't. I did
nearly.
Prevail,
so you're saying yours was difficult to overcome.
Oh. Gosh, it was nearly insuperable. And by the way, I just want to say to the nobodies, I am loving, every now and then somebody sends us an email saying that they saw a speech that someone has made or that, you know, where they've used one of our words. And what that tells me is that a lot of the leadership in the country is listening to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone and is writing these words down. And so I'm very excited about that. Yeah, no, that's what's happening.
There's another possibility. Obviously, there's another possibility there, Paula, which is that these people already knew those words.
That's ridiculous. So, okay. No, it's listeners.
Right.
I just had to clear my guitar. Hold on. It's listeners. And this part I'm going to go out on a limb on. I can't validate this, but I believe that it has to do with my vocabulary song, where each week I add a word to the song, and it seems to really be working. And you know what?
What's that, Paula?
This week is no different. I have the... I know what you were hoping for, Adam Felber.
Different. I was hoping for different. I was hoping for you to say, you know what, Adam? Let's skip the vocabulary song this week and just go out and get a sandwich.
No, that's not what I was going to say. You know what I was going to say, Adam? I was going to say, this week's word is insuperable. It's an adjective that means impossible to overcome. That can make a person glum. Last week's word was nonplussed. It's an adjective that means surprised and confused and not knowing how to react. Might describe me if Trump said a fact. The week before that was Qatar. It's a noun that means excessive mucus in the throat or nose. You can hear it in every one of my shows. Going back before that, we had cataplexy. It's a noun that means a medical condition in which a strong emotion or laughter causes a person to experience sudden weakness in the muscles. Ha, 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 I can't budge. And not long ago, we had
Are you taking a solo?
Lacuna, it's a noun that means gap or. Let's never forget gallimafry. It's a noun that means confused jumbler medley of things. Hodgepodge, who's podge, hodgepodge. Adam doesn't think my song is replicable, but I do, I do, I do, I do.
Woo! Wow.
Bravo, yeah. Bravo. I love it.
Oh, my God. Right. You know what? So many people do, Bonnie. I've been contacted by so many record labels.
You really haven't.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll be honest. I haven't, but okay. it's because they're working from home, and so it's really slowed production down. But I'm right. What I meant was I'm about to be contacted by so many. There's going to be a bidding war. That's what's going to happen.
Or a cease and desist order.
No. It's wrong there. bidding war. Wrong, hey, okay. I just want to say that we still have our 100th caller contest, and it is going so well.
It really is. It's going great. We had, I want to backtrack on that a little bit, is in that last week we had that surprise caller on the show, Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks was caller, what, like 51 through 56? He just kept calling back.
I think, yeah. And how did that come about, Paula?
I bump into him at Roger Federer's appliance store all the time. And what he told me was that Dame Maggie Smith was driving him around and had dropped him off, because he had the virus. And so he couldn't drive himself because, that's not
completely
accurate.
Not true. No, he that's said absolutely that, not true.
You know, he was in a beekeeper suit when he got in the car with her.
Really?
Yeah,
I was under the impression that he was no longer in beekeeper suits once he came home from Australia.
No, but he just wanted to be certain because it's Dame Maggie Smith. Okay. Nobody wants to infect Dame Maggie
She's
Smith.
She's old. She's definitely old.
Well, I wasn't going to say that. I just see such a treasure. She wants to be on this show, but that kind of talk, by the way, will probably put her off. But she has wanted to be on this show. She used to wait outside of the studio for us, but not being in the studio anymore. Apparently, she met Tom at Roger Federer's and was driving around. Then he called in, just excited to hang out with you after the game. That's certainly one of the reasons. So what number are we up to?
Tony Anita Hull, what number call are we up to now?
66.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. It's almost over. So you guys, you've got to call in. These prizes are so hot. Any appliance you want from Roger Federer's appliance store, and also a chance to hang out with Adam after the game. And as if that's not exciting enough, Adam, we have today another online auction.
Oh, good. I love these auctions that we hold.
Well, I'm so excited because we've had some really remarkable items before.
This one
really tilts the scales.
We've had some great items. For instance, we had the Shirley Chisholm trail mix.
Yes, that was fantastic. Yeah, somebody really got their hands on a piece of history there. And we had the Crystal Sutton lint ball that belonged to Crystal Sutton, who was the union organizer in the mills in the early 70s, and an inspirational story. And she had a lint ball, and so we auctioned that off, and it was fantastic.
And, of course, we auctioned off the paper mache, one of the paper mache heads used in the famous Escape from Alcatraz, not the movie, but the actual escape.
Yeah, that was amazing, because they really had kept their, the head had really kept its shape. The prisoners used it they put it in their bunks so that when the guards walked by, it looked like there was somebody sleeping there, and we were able to get our hands on that paper mache head. We made some bidder very, very happy with that paper mache head.
I'm sure we did,
slice of history there. Big slice of history.
We had a lot
and
of good ones.
We had the boat from Lewis and Clark. That was what we got started with, and we broke the door at the studio getting it in there.
That's what got us kicked out of the Ray Horseman Studios.
That's exactly correct. It's a real shame. Well, tonight, I wish I could show a picture of this, but, I'm limited. Tonight, for our online auction, I have a food that Gandhi refused to eat during his fast. It's a bowl of rice. It's not just any bowl of rice, though. This rice was offered to Gandhi during his last fast. For those who don't know, Mahatma Gandhi lived from October 2nd, 1869 through January 30th, 1948, when he was assassinated by an upset man. He was a leader of India's nonviolent movement against British rule. He inspired world leaders like Martin Luther King Jr. and Nelson Mandela. And he fasted in protest a number of times. And this bowl of rice was offered to him, and he said, no, thank you. And
he said, no, thank you. Well, that's good. Even right up to the end, he was very polite.
Well, he didn't die from fasting. He was assassinated by an upset man. But
and he was like a world-class faster, too. I think he fasted for 21 days more than once.
That's correct. He did fast for 21 days, yes. And just so that audience members know, the auction will close tonight at the end of the show. And
now, this is just a bowl of rice.
No, it's not just a bowl of rice. It's a bowl of rice that was offered to Gandhi during last fast.
Okay. Is it saffron rice? Is it jasmine? Is it prepared in sort of a traditional Indian fashion, maybe with some onions and cinnamon? I mean, what kind of rice dish are we dealing with here?
It's just rice. You know, it's not in a box, so I couldn't tell you. This is rice. It's in a bowl. It's rice in a bowl.
And what condition is it in now? Because, you know, as you said, Gandhi died in 1948. So this must be an 80-something-year-old or a 70-something-year-old bowl of rice.
Well, it looks a little something like, you know, if you ever order from like a restaurant in an airport and they have the plastic food replicas.
Okay.
Because they don't want to just put the food out there all day as a demonstration.
It's like mummified rice.
It does. It looks a little bit mummified.
Let me ask you one question. A lot of times with these auctions that people hold, you get people who buy these things from like Christie's and wherever else they have these auctions, they get a certificate of authenticity signed by an expert. Because, you know, I know you're not this
kind
of person.
Oh my gosh, Adam, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but we just got our first online bid. It's from Colleen O'Hanley, who she's a nobody. Nobody, Colleen O'Hanley just bid $200. Thank you for starting us off, Colleen. That is fantastic.
That's terrific.
Wow, $200. That's a steal.
Pretty amazing.
I want to thank you, nobody, Colleen O'Hanley, for that bid, just getting us rolling on this authentic.
That is wonderful.
Authentic bowl
now
of Indian
back
rice.
To that.
That was turned down
idea.
By Gandhi.
Now, do you have an expert signed certificate of authenticity that this rice was indeed offered to Mahatma Gandhi?
We just had another bid. I cannot believe it.
Okay.
This one is from Nobody Anthony Pasqua for $250. Way to bump it up there, Anthony. Wow. Thank you so much. Okay. That is fantastic. Wow. These guys really, I can't thank you guys enough. $250.
Yeah, it seems like you're avoiding my question, Paula. It seems like you're finding a new bid whenever I ask the question straight up.
Is there some sort of certificate?
Yes. Is there some sort of certificate of authenticity associated with this bowl of rice?
Fuck, there's termites in my bedroom. I you know what? I'd love to answer.
What? All right, very well.
Yes, of course it's authentic. Of course it's authentic.
I get that you say it's authentic.
Yes, I do. I have a certificate of authenticity from a place called Don't Ask Acquisitions.
Don't Ask Acquisitions. I've never heard of that firm, but they sound on the up and up.
Yes, they are. They do a lot of work with Christie's. I'm very excited. To have this rice because Gandhi was a very important figure in history. And I think, especially during these difficult times, it's so important to be able to, I think, you know, focus on people who we admire and try to emulate them. And that's the kind of strength that's going to get us through. And so, you know, I really want to thank both Anthony and Colleen for these terrific bids. Adam, answer the phone.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Hello?
Am I the 100th caller?
No, you're not. You're caller number 67, I believe. Am I right, Tony? 67?
67.
Yes.
67. Well, Adam Felber, it is good to talk to you. It's me, Gladys Pilgrim.
Hi, Gladys.
So excited about becoming a Supreme Court person.
Yes. I am
about to be appointed by President Trump, and it's a darn shame I'm not the 100th caller. But it's worth it just to get to talk to you, Adam.
Well, Gladys.
Yes?
I've always wondered. You say that he told you this, although he's never actually made a public statement mentioning your name. How did he tell you?
Right to my face, Adam. Right, we were side by side. I was in the Oval Office with him, and I was there as part of the prayer vigil group that surrounds him. And
That's the one where you all touch him and pray.
Yes, we put our hands on various parts of his body, and I was lucky enough to be given the penis. And so
hold on a second.
I had my hand on his penis, and we were praying.
No, you didn't.
We did. You said that, and I hope
you're changing your story, Gladys.
Not listening right now. What did I say before?
You said that his genitals were given to that spiritual advisor of his.
Oh, to Paula White. My mistake.
Yes, right.
Yeah. Well, okay, here's what happened. You know, the tip of his elbow can be a little squishy. And and then all of a sudden it'll stiffen up. So there are some similar properties. You know, he'll bend it and, you know, right there at the weenus. So did I say penis? I meant weenus. My mistake.
You meant weenus?
Yeah, that's that section of the elbow where your elbow bends and that skin that is there. It's called the weenus.
And that's called a weenus.
Yes, that's correct.
Are you sure about that, Gladys? That's a song. That's something that could appear in our vocabulary song at some point.
It is. It's called
this week's word is weenus. It's the flappy skin and your elbow when you straighten your arm doesn't cause harm, goes away when you bend it.
You know, Adam, everyone knows that already. I would like to practice my argument for being a Supreme Court person. And I know that there is an upcoming case about Trump's financial records disclosure, about our president's financial records disclosure.
That's right. He's being sued for his tax history and stuff like that.
So why
and you would like to practice what?
I would like to practice making my, my opinion.
Oh, making your opinion, not your argument. Because the arguments are what the people who come before the court offer, and then you guys render your decisions and your opinions.
Oh, I'm going to have to get that straight before
yes, I
get there.
I think
there.
You are.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you, Adam Felber. You saved me a lot of trouble. So
let's
why
practice.
You make an argument, and I'll give you my opinion. Go ahead.
Okay. I think it's completely fair to know the personal financial dealings of our important public figures, particularly presidents of the United States.
All right. No, it isn't. Thanks.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to have to go now, Adam. Thank you so much for that practice.
Okay, you're welcome, Gladys. Gladys Pilgrim,
so nice.
Everybody.
It was so nice talking to you. I'm going to call back because I would really like to be the 100th caller.
Okay, Gladys. All right, coming up, George Orwell wrote, "A human being is primarily a bag for putting food into. Yet it is curious how seldom the all-importance of food is recognized. You see statues everywhere to politicians, poets, bishops, but none to cooks or bacon curers or market gardeners." We'll uncover how our food source in these troubled times, grocery stores, really work when we return on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Hey guys, it's Adam, and tonight is January 3rd, and I am picking Giannis Antetokounmpo to score less than 36 points and James Harden to score more than 16. Why? Because I like beards. Am I putting a lot of money on this? I am not, because I'm not really a gambler, but I am having a lot of fun with Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America.
They're the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, who I would lose to, you pick more or less than 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in, or in my case, not. So I don't bet a lot. With the basketball season here, you can now pick combo projections across football and basketball from the Specials League, a league created specifically for combo projections that include 2 or more players from different sports or leagues. For example, LeBron James and Travis Kelce had a 10.5 combo of 3 points made plus receptions. Do I get that? Kind of a little bit. Prize Picks even offers a reboot policy so that your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. For football and basketball, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and doesn't return in the second, that player is rebooted. So, it's like an insurance policy. Go to prizepicks.com/nobody and use code NOBODY for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/nobody and use code NOBODY for a first deposit match of up to $100. And then drop by and see how I did with the Greek Freak and Harden again on January 3rd. My hopes are not that high. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
On this day in unremarkable history, Pope Pius XI said, "Damn it! Does anyone know how to get red wine out of white cotton? Whose bright idea was this combination?"
Thank you, Houseband Adam Sartain. Just great, great stuff. Paula, just about the only place I go anymore, and I'm sure you might be the same, is the grocery store.
Oh, I do. And you know what's weird? It's made me realize I know nothing about how grocery stores really work.
What do you mean by that? They sell food, right?
Right. But I mean, I go there, but I don't pay attention to this place that is so important. I just look for stuff on the shelf and then I buy it. But I have no idea how it all works on the inside.
Well, Paula Poundstone, on the phone with us is someone who can give us a full bag of knowledge about grocery stores. He's worked in a New York City grocery store that will remain anonymous for 14 years. And to allow him to speak freely about that world, we will not disclose the name of the store he works at or his last name. Yes, he's in the Grocery Store Protection Program. Let's welcome this Lower East Side native from New York City, Raymond.
Hey, Raymond.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good. I'm so glad you're here.
Raymond, thank you for your service, man.
Yeah, really.
Not a problem. Thank you.
We feel at this point that grocery workers are our heroes, working through the pandemic, making sure people get food. And you've worked there for 14 years. You didn't even know all hell was going to break loose. What do you think, Raymond, is the biggest misperception the public has about how a grocery store works?
That we just pack groceries for a living, and that's what we do, when the truth is, like, we've had Harvard graduates that are working with us. We've had people with master's degrees, PhDs, people. I know someone who got, like, 5 years into school as a doctor before they quit. Like, it's highly educated people where I work.
We're interesting.
And what jobs have you done?
United States Marine Corps.
So thank you for your service twice.
Oh, yeah, yes. You're welcome.
Is it a little weird for people to be thanking you for your service for the Marine Corps, but now they're also doing it for your service in the grocery store?
Absolutely. I'm always uncomfortable with.
Okay, then I take it back.
No.
And in the 14 years working inside the grocery store, what jobs have you done?
Have you worked your way up? Is there a hierarchy? Is there a stepping stones, or does everybody do everything?
Well, the place where I specifically work, you can move up if you choose to.
Mm-hmm.
I've known people who've gotten to the highest you can possibly get and have been there less than I have.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh.
That's because I choose not to, because I don't want to do this for the rest of my life.
And okay. So what are the things? Like, what are the, you know, what are the jobs within the grocery store?
What I do is I do cashier. I put up groceries. I do a little bit of everything.
Uh-huh.
And then above me is the manager, and they're supervising all of that.
And when do they do the restocking? Is that at night or all day long?
It depends. For my store specifically,
yes,
we do perishables in the morning, which is what I do. I work at 4 a.m. to about 12 o'clock. sometimes most of the time 10. And that's the graveyard shit. We do perishables, so produce, dairy, cold cuts, meat, like that stuff. And then at night
food, they do foods the dry that can, things that can go bad.
Yeah, yeah. And then at night they do all the dry stuff. And I think they also do frozen stuff at night as well.
Which one is your favorite section?
I don't have a favorite section. I have a worst section, and that's
what's that?
That's produce. I refuse to do produce. I say it every morning. I'm not doing produce.
Why is produce so bad?
I just don't like it. I've been working there 14 years. I know what I like and I know what I don't like at my store, and I don't like doing produce. I can do produce, yes, but don't tell me to smile or be good at it, because I won't.
Now, are you like about, scared of carrots or something?
No. It's just a very large load, and it changes all the time, and there's no consistency, and it's always a nightmare. It's always a nightmare, and I'm like, no.
You know, that's true. Produce sections are always being reorganized.
Yeah, it's freaking ridiculous. I can't.
Fucking ridiculous. Fantastic. All right, now, when you do, like, canned goods, do you have to make the cans face a certain way, or can you just put them up there?
It depends on who the person is, but what I do is I put up everything, and then at the end of everything, I go back and I face everything to show the label and everything.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I do it. But other people, like, do it as they're putting it up. I don't do that. I just like to throw everything up and then come back around and take 10 minutes to face everything. That's how I usually do it.
Now, if I were in the store that you work in and I went in, like I used to work in a bookstore, for example, and I wasn't all that good at it, but there was a guy at the bookstore I worked at in Boston that customers would come in and say stuff like, do you have that book with the white cover? And in a second, he would know, like he could figure out what they were talking about and hand them the book that they were looking at or tell them what section. What is like the least amount of information someone's ever given you about what they wanted and you knew where it was?
Well, usually when it comes to what we have, like there's usually one specific product that like everyone gets. Like there's one like for instance, one type of tofu that everyone wants, even though we have like six types.
Oh, really?
So when they're like, I'm looking for this tofu, I'm like, enough said, come on. So I take and to be honest, it's one of the six, although I'm pretty sure it's this one, which is the one that is never there because we sell it all the time.
Yeah.
But like everything's in the same general section. So all you got to say is, I want this. I want, all right, let's go.
Yeah.
And, or either that, or this happens a lot. They're like, you know, that thing, blah, blah. And I'm like, we don't sell that. Yeah, you do. No, we don't. And then they come back to me later and they're like, oh yeah, I'm sorry. They sell it at this place. And I'm like, yeah, that's not this place. So I was right.
Yeah. Have you ever come to fisticuffs over someone insisting that you sell something that you don't? Have you ever had to get rough?
No. You mean like to hit someone?
Yeah, I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. I was like, yeah, no, this is not.
How do you like the checkout line? Is it fun interacting with the customers on that, or would you rather be stocking?
I'd rather be stocking.
I gotcha.
I can do it. It's not hard. It's just, I'd rather be stocking. I'd rather just be stocking. That's just my strength.
Uh-huh. Now, Raymond, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm picking up on is that there's like the way you are regular with other people and then the way you are with the customers. Are you entirely yourself with the customers?
No, not in the least.
Now, why is that? Why is that?
Because you got to put on a persona. I can't. If I was me, I'd have been fired years ago.
So basically, you're putting up with a lot of our customer hijinks.
Yeah, but you know, I'm just being nice and proper, and that is me. But at the same time, it's not. I like to curse a lot. I like to make inappropriate jokes. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not.
Yeah, I do. Yes. Yeah. Not because of you, but because I'm like that. Because I find in a lot of the grocery stores that I go to that the people are really nice. The people who work there really nice and really knowledgeable. But sometimes I myself don't like the other customers. There are women that wear like tight yoga pants and purposely block access to the chip aisle.
Now, Paula, I have to ask you, what do the yoga pants have to do with the chip aisle?
Well, I think they're just sort of showing off their physique, and they know that somebody who looks like me is trying to get to the chip aisle. So
so they're genuinely interposing their yoga pant clad legs.
They've done their booty burning, and now they're
flaunting it.
Right, exactly. And now they're just making it so that I can't get to the chips. Sometimes they just seem a little entitled, I guess, too.
Entitled women in yoga pants blocking the chip aisle. Have you seen it, Raymond?
Yeah, it's a grocery store I work at is located literally right next to a college dorm. So, like, these young girls come in, coming back from yoga and working out, always wearing booty shorts and yoga pants. And
does that annoy you as much as it annoys Paula Poundstone?
After 14 years, I'm just used to it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it's not. So
okay. It doesn't affect you in any way.
You know, Irma Bombeck said the odds of going to the store for a loaf of bread and coming out with only a loaf of bread are 3 billion to 1. Stay tuned to hear more about the secret life of the grocery store from Raymond. The cat of the week is Mushu from Westchester, Pennsylvania.
The detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me down there my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof wherever you get your podcasts and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
And we're back with grocery store worker Raymond. Welcome back, Raymond.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Raymond, I gotta tell you, I love your accent. I love a New York accent. Do you, like, if you watch movies and people are doing New York accents, does it bother you?
Not in the least.
No.
In fact, when I was in the Marine Corps, like, all the time, I would just talk, everyone's like, New York. I'm like, okay. instantaneously. Didn't even think about it.
Raymond, talk about how much things have changed and what it's like now at the grocery store during this corona lockdown.
Oh, man. Like, I don't even know where to begin on that. It's just so much because, like, you know, obviously no one expected it to become like this. Like, 2 months ago, I was worried about, you know, graduating because I'm getting my master's this May. And now, like, I have to get ready every morning like I'm about to do surgery to go into work.
Yeah.
That's right. You got to wear mask and gloves all the time, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, you know, people are giving a lot of like flack to businesses that are like not taking precautions or taking precautions or not doing it fast enough. Not, you know, and it's just like nobody really know, like, especially in the beginning, nobody really knew how bad this would get. So
right.
My store particularly was taking steps like on a daily basis, I'm gonna give you an example with gloves. Normally the policy is it's frowned upon to wear gloves. You shouldn't wear gloves.
Uh-huh.
It's frowned upon originally.
Right.
When it started out, when it wasn't a big thing, it was still frowned upon, even though people were talking about it. Then right. It got a little more seriously and people started rebelling and started wearing gloves and not particularly in my store, but in other stores under my company's name, they were writing people up for wearing gloves.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it's like, but once again, this is the beginnings of the virus getting extremely serious. Right. So they're not taking it as seriously as they could.
Yeah.
A week later, suddenly it's like, okay, we still frown upon wearing gloves, but you can wear them if it makes you feel safe. Mm-hmm. Okay, right? So now we're now people are wearing gloves, some people aren't. The week after, it's okay, gloves are mandatory now. Then masks were optional. Now masks are mandatory. Now masks are mandatory for customers, and this changed every week. So every time I'd come in, something new would be on the table. And I was like, you know, I'm going to come in one day, be wearing my regular shirt and pants for my job, and everyone's going to be wearing yellow hazmat suits. And I'm like, what do I miss?
Yeah. Well, I feel that even as a customer, like every time I go back to the store, and, you know, I'm all for whatever protective stuff they want to do. That's fine with me. But when you walk in, they sometimes assume you already know, and other customers will glower at you. You know, like the other day I realized that I'm like pushing my cart, and then I realized, hey, there's arrows on the floor, and they seem to be pointing at me. And that's when I realized I was going the wrong way on a one-way aisle, but it had never been a one-way aisle before. And I couldn't figure out why they were doing it. And then I realized it's because in the aisles, you have no way of getting 6 feet away from someone.
Right. If you're all moving in the same direction, then you've got a traffic pattern.
But, you know, it would have been nice for someone to tell me that. Instead, at one point, I saw like a red laser light on my jacket, and I realized they were about to take me out. And
yeah, well, you know, I agree. They should let you know. I mean, I remember standing in line and wondering, like, you know, what's the red tape on the floor about?
Yeah, yeah. It's just good.
I'm supposed to stand at that line.
But I think part of it is that everybody's, you know, they're figuring out their rules. All, you know, it's everything is happening in this sort of rolling, you know, rolling way. It feels a little bit like when you were in the first grade and just everything was like every day you come in, there's something. What do you mean I have to sit down all day? You know, there's some new thing that you never experienced in your life before. You know,
never let go of that, Paula.
Yeah.
Now, I have told Paula on this very program, and you can either agree with me or disagree with me, that the one thing about this corona lockdown that I've actually enjoyed is the whole idea that there's not that many people in the store at a time. How do you like it?
To be honest, it gets very boring after a while.
Because
there isn't a lot to do because we're not selling as much, so we're not getting as much in. And then we don't need that many cash registers. And then the only thing left to do is clean. And I didn't like to clean before this went down.
Yeah.
So
right.
I understand it's necessary, and I've been doing my part when the time comes. But like, even I have a point where I'm like, okay, I can't do this. I can't wipe down another screen.
Yeah.
I hear that.
Oh, I forgot about the screens. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm so sort of old school that I still. Even before the virus, I mean, I was still handing my credit card to the clerk for years, and they would hand it back to me and say, no, you put it in that thing. I did it wrong even before the stress of this thing. I imagine that over in paper goods, where the Kleenex and the toilet paper is, you probably have to go over there to wipe down a lot because of the large piles of dust that build up on the empty shelves.
Yeah, we some more a couple weeks ago. Now it's gotten a little better.
There's paper products again.
What about you? You have toilet paper in New York?
We do.
Oh my heavens,
Paula! It's not worth flying to New York for. Just stay where you are.
I'm telling you, I'm going to start
shelter
walking.
In place.
I don't think you can fly anymore. I'm walking.
We do.
No, Raymond, we have no toilet paper out here. It's because New York's been hoarding it. Damn it, Raymond.
Don't blame Raymond. It's not his fault, Paula.
I do blame him. You should have seen people. So did you see people wheeling out like huge carts of toilet paper?
We did at the beginning, but we quickly put an end to that. We started controlling, like we started holding the paper goods behind in the back. So if they would be like, I want toilet paper. Okay, how many? You can only get up to two. Let me get two. Let me get one. And that's how we controlled it for a bit.
So now, it was done more like a drug deal. Is that correct?
Absolutely. you want some toilet paper? We got some hand sanitizer, but that's, you know, that's about it.
Has anybody tried to make it worth your while to get stuff that you don't have and like they try to bribe you?
Believe it or not, yes.
That's excellent. Was it for toilet paper?
It was for an entire box of hand sanitizer.
Wow. Really? They wanted the whole box?
Yep.
They were probably going to sell it, right?
No. He asked multiple people, and after that, like, everyone was like, no, I'm not going to get in on this, because if that happens and I lose my job over this, I'm going to be pissed. So,
oh, yeah. Right.
Was it an octopus? And he had like so many.
Oh, because they have lots of hands, Paul? Yeah,
exactly. That they needed more. No one ever thinks about that, but that could happen.
I don't think they're susceptible to the virus, nor do I think they shop in grocery stores. but it's a worthy. It's otherwise, it's a completely worthwhile question.
Yeah, I think it was. Well, Raymond, I know you don't like to be thanked for your service, but you know what? I feel like you grocery store people really are frontlines people, and I appreciate you being there, and I hope that you do stay safe, and that, you know, when you go home, you just, the second you get in your apartment, you just strip naked and run to the shower.
And I want to add my thanks too, Raymond. Thanks for helping us register how a grocery store rings up its operations. And now we're going to take that information we got from you and run it through the old Pouncedonator. Paula?
Okay, Adam Sartain, if I can get a little background music, I will tell you what my takeaways are. Protocols are changing so fast in grocery stores. Trying to outrun the spread of this virus, it's necessary, so we as customers have to just suck it up. But our friends who work at grocery stores are on the receiving end of a dizzying array of changing rules. On Monday, it turns out, they have to wear gloves, and I mean on their feet. On Tuesday, they arrive in gloves only to be written up and told to wear toe shoes because there's some research that shows COVID-19 stops dead in its tracks entirely by a pirouette. On Wednesday, masks had to be worn covering their mouth and nose, but on Thursday, grocery workers were additionally required to wear paper bag masks made from grocery bags with the store's logos clearly showing on the back. The virus, of course, is spread in little droplets of moisture that come from our mouths. And given that even more drops spray when using the letter P, employees are required to come in early on Friday to rename potatoes otatoes and make signs guiding customers to the produce department and telling them that until further notice, they won't be selling bell peppers at all.
He has worked at a New York City grocery store for 14 years. Thank you for being on our show, Raymond.
Thanks, Raymond.
Yeah. Coming up, Quarantine Corner. Dust off your 8th grade math. Square roots, you're up next.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of mega. A comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he f*** but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I. Y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're Jesus, the best. You the be-
okay, never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, house band Adam Sartain. Sounding terrific.
Oh my gosh, that really was great. House band Adam Sartain, thank you so much. Oh, you know what, Adam? We have, it actually came in while we were interviewing Raymond, but I didn't want to interrupt. We got another online auction bid. And of course, listeners, we're bidding on a bowl of rice that Gandhi refused during his final fast, which is when he turned down this bowl of rice.
Now, is this the absolute last thing he turned down, or is this just one of the bowls of rice he turned down?
I think it's one of. I'll have to check back with Don't Ask Acquisitions, but I believe this is just one of multiple foods that Gandhi refused.
Okay. So you're not bidding, people, you're not bidding on Gandhi's very last refused meal.
No, it's one, I believe.
Nor are you bidding on a meal that he just had a nibble of.
No, he did not eat any of this rice. This rice is sort of, right, you can tell, because there's no bites taken out of this rice. He definitely, what, were you thinking, you know, Gandhi? Were you thinking Gandhi cheated on his fast? No, that's not who he was.
No, but I think in addition to his many hunger strikes, he did do a couple of well-known nibble strikes.
No, he didn't nibble.
Yeah, where he, you know, these aren't, he wasn't quite as angry and he wasn't quite as worked up about it. He's like, all right, guess what? For the next month, I'm only going to have a taste.
So you're saying that he went through a period where in mild protest, he just played with his food?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I don't think that's accurate.
He pushed it onto the lettuce.
No,
yeah.
In this particular protest, his last fast was for, he was fighting for communal harmony. And, okay, but, so we have a bid. This bid came from Alice Walton, heir to the Walmart fortune. I believe Alice is the second richest woman in the world. She's worth $54.4 billion. Her brother, Jim Walton, is worth $54.6 billion, which has got to create some sort of sibling rivalry that, you know, 0.4 and 0.6.
One of them just invested better.
So Alice has bid $20,050. $20,050 on the bowl of rice turned down by Gandhi during his last fast. Boy, I guess her brother Jim may have 0.2 billion more than her, but he doesn't have the rice that Gandhi refused on his last fast. So this...
Not at the moment. It's Alice's right now to lose.
It's looking like... I mean, this is absurd.
It's a big bid.
She's the second richest woman, I believe, in the world. And,
right,
heir to the Walmart fortune.
Sure.
So, you know, I don't want to say... I don't want to wreck...
One more question, Paula, just because I'm curious. Do we know, does the historical record tell us if when Gandhi was offered this rice, if he was like, no, stupid, I'm on a hunger strike, or if he actually like pretended that he wasn't hungry?
No, that's a false choice, Adam.
Okay, I'm just asking.
Gandhi was neither an asshole nor a liar. So this isn't a petulant child. It was a purposeful, deliberate. He was saying, I'm not going to eat until there's harmony and
sure.
Yeah. It was a courageous act. It wasn't just somebody sending food back at a restaurant. So when you go to a restaurant and you order a hamburger and it comes back and it's a cheeseburger and you send it back, you feel like you're fasting for a cause. Is that correct?
No, absolutely not.
So you like take that back, and then you kind of wave at people in the restaurant. You know what? I'm taking a stand here. I'm not eating the hamburger until
I'm on a hunger strike. No, I don't.
I'm on
do
a
that.
Hunger strike.
I
until
basically
that burger...
never send food back.
Oh yeah, you don't. Yeah, yeah.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you just eat it, and then you tell them it was wrong, and then you get. I see what you're doing.
I'm not a complainer. I eat as much of it as I can. I'm just not a complainer. I'm like Gandhi in that way.
Did you just
pretty much only
did
that
you
way.
Just compare yourself to Gandhi?
I don't
Gandhi?
Send food back.
Did you just say you're like
I'm
Gandhi?
Saying,
did I just hear you say I you're said, like Gandhi?
I've got one or two things in common with him. Baldness.
Yeah,
and
say,
I don't send back food.
Yeah, and yeah. I don't I'm not sure that you have even that much in common with Gandhi.
You don't think I'm bald?
No, you are bald. Wait a minute, Adam. Wait a minute. I can't believe this.
Yes.
Holy O'Hanley, Adam. Colleen O'Hanley is not going to let Alice Walton walk away with this bowl of uneaten Gandhi rice. She has bid $20,100. Thank you, Colleen. I thought there's no way I thought that was going to happen. That is so fantastic. You know, it's like
Colleen, I would advise you to maybe think again, maybe let Walton have it, because that's a lot of money for one of our nobodies.
No, you know what? First of all, thank you so much, Colleen. But second of all, you know, it's a piece of history, Adam. I don't know if you're gathering that. I mean, I guess you feel a connection to Gandhi because you're bald and you don't send food back. But for a lot of people, the idea that you have a tangible with you where you can feel that connection to this man that was one of the greatest men in history, and this bowl of rice that, and I'm describing Gandhi now, this bowl of rice that he didn't eat.
Not me.
Fantastic. Just a really beautiful thing. Thank you so much, Colleen.
I guess it is. Although, Colleen, I would advise you to maybe just consider shaving your head. It's so much cheaper.
No.
That's all I'm saying.
You know, then you could be Phil Collins. It's not the same. It's not the same. You could be Kojak. It's not the same. Thank you, right. Colleen. Yeah. That was really, really, really beautiful.
All right. Well, so it's time now,
are we
everybody.
Going to Quarantine Corner?
Yes, it's time for Quarantine Corner. We got this email from an eighth grader named Nate. Let me read it to you. Hello. I really enjoyed your Quarantine Corner segment on your most recent episode. As a current eighth grader, the information was actually relevant to what I'm learning. God help you, Nate. I was wondering, next week, could you do a math Quarantine Corner? It would be really helpful. Thanks. Well, Nate, you asked for it, and we're delivering. Paula, what do you remember from eighth grade math?
You know, I'm so glad you asked, Adam. Here's what I remember from eighth grade math. I remember that our teacher, Mr. Joyce, he never used the chalkboard. He only used an overhead projector, and he was already sitting in his chair looking into the bright light of the overhead projector, which had like a very, very like flat surface where you would, as the teacher, he would write on a thing called a transparency, which was really just a plastic sheet, and it would be projected up onto a screen that he pulled down over the blackboard. He was literally sitting in the chair when we arrived in the room, mesmerized by the intensity of the light. And then he would like dim the lights in the rest of the room. And he was looking into this bright light. I don't think his eyes ever adjusted. And so I don't know if he even knew the students were in the room. I don't think he ever saw us. And I certainly never, I don't remember one thing other than that he wrote on that overhead projector, and I'm really hoping.
Okay, Paula. Now, on Nate's behalf, I want to point out that, as opposed to being something that you learned from eighth grade math, that's an anecdote.
Well, no, let me say this. And I think this is going to help Nate. And I think this is just the kind of thing, you know, that basically Nate has given us a cry for help, and I'm there for you, Nate. I'm a first responder for you. What I'm telling you, Nate.
I'm only Gandhi. You're a first responder.
I'm a first responder, Nate, which is don't look into a bright light and don't take mathematics instruction from someone who does. So that, and okay. Nate, by the way, that's a very well-written email. And we love you and thank you for it. And we're not going to say your last
name.
That's
probably why he wasn't asking for English help.
And we're not going to say your last name, Nate, and we're not going to.
No, we're not.
We're not going to say that you're Nate Higgins from Colorado. We're not going to do it.
No. We're going to say that your last name, Nate, is not Cavendish.
Exactly. It's not Cavendish.
That's as much of a hint as we're giving to everybody.
Yeah. So we're going to have a lot of people writing and guessing what Nate it is. Eighth grade Nate. Thank you.
Now let's move on. Tony Anita Hull, yes. Our beloved producer, who is coming to us. Are you sitting down or standing up now, Tony?
I'm sitting down now.
You're in your office.
So she's in her office, Adam. She's using her pencil. When she stands up,
look at this. It's Mrs. Culpepper.
I love any time Tony Anita Hull is on the show. I just love to talk to her. When she stands up, she will use her wire whisk on her pencil whisk. device that she's created. I do. She is the closest to the eighth grade of any of us, and so I know that she's
that
gonna.
That is undeniable.
She's gonna remember a piece of eighth grade mathematics training that will be edifying to all of us. Go ahead, Tony.
Thank you, Mrs. Culpepper. So my eighth grade math teacher was Mr. Vakina. He was also bald.
He was like Gandhi.
He was like Gandhi, yes, and Adam Felber.
Wow. Now I'm jealous.
So I actually remember doing a lot of word problems in math. And I thought for Nate I would write one. So I wrote one for him to practice
on.
Oh,
wow. That's real. Let's hear it.
If Captain Crinkle, Bonnie Burns, crinkles at 64 crinkles per minute, and Adam says, God damn it, Bonnie, every 16 crinkles, how many times does Adam say, God damn it, Bonnie, over the course of 2 minutes?
Wow!
Over the course of 2 minutes. Okay, so Nate, once again, that's if Captain Crinkle crinkles at a rate of 64 crinkles per minute, and every 16 of those crinkles, let me know if I'm wrong, Tony, every 16 of those crinkles, Adam Felber says, God damn it, Bonnie. In 2 minutes, how many times will Adam say, God damn it, Bonnie? Is that the question, Tony?
That is correct.
God damn it, Bonnie.
Wow, that is Tony. Thank you. That is a beautiful word problem. Thank you, Tony. You need a hook.
Here's what I want you to do, Nate. I want you to stop playing the podcast right now, so that you can do the math, and then we'll have Tony Anita Hull tell you the answer. Okay, so stop the podcast now. Okay, we're back. Tony Anita Hull, what is the answer to the word problem you gave Nate?
You, over the course of 2 minutes, would say, God damn it, Bonnie, 8 times.
8 times. Because right. 8 times 16 is, what 60, was it, what were we doing 64? Here? 128?
128.
Yeah. The trick was it was 2 minutes. Yes. Tony Anita Hull, that was a great question.
Yeah, that was a great
Thank
question.
Thank you.
I couldn't do anything with it. I couldn't figure it out for the life of me because I'm staring into this bright light, which is what I learned in math in the eighth grade.
I thought you learned not to stare into the bright light.
Well, no, I mean, I should have learned. I'm not a big lesson learner, I'll be honest with you.
I'm sure Nate appreciates that.
I'm one of the few people Captain Crinkle,
God
I think it's
damn
your
it,
turn.
Bonnie. Yeah, I know it's your turn. All right, now we're going to move from the very helpful Tony Anita Hull to the significantly less helpful Paula's manager, our beloved producer, Captain Crinkle, Bonnie Burns. What do you remember from eighth grade math? We get it.
Okay, Nate, I have an easy one, and it's a good way for you to remember. To square a number, you multiply it by the same number.
Oh,
that's helpful.
Wow. Bonnie, now.
But when you say.
Tell me truly, did you remember that from eighth grade math? Or did you Google what kids learn in eighth grade and go like, oh, yeah, squares, I kind of remember that, and then include it as your thing? Aha!
But I have to say, when you say it's a good way to remember, it's not just a good way to remember. It's what squaring means, isn't it?
That's exactly what it means, yeah. Oh,
yeah, well. That's like pointing to a car and saying, this is a car, and a good way to remember it is it's a car.
Yeah, Paula's not wrong. And Bonnie, by the way, what is 6 squared?
What is 6 squared? 36.
Yeah.
There's an example.
See?
Great. Yes.
There you go.
Bonnie has no problem with math. Her teacher never used an overhead projector, and so she has both her vision and her mathematics well in hand.
Oh, her intellect, her mathematical acumen. So here's what I remember from eighth grade math. I remember the curriculum, but for Nate, I'll just say this. From what I remember, and this might just be historical knowledge, is that I was a little bit of a nerd, and I was in advanced math in junior high, and I discovered in eighth grade math that the stereotype that math people were like brown polyester pants wearing bespectacled dudes with button-down shirts and pocket protectors was 100% true of Mr. Borison.
Oh, was that who you had, Mr. Borison?
I had Mr. Borison, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if you knew this, but Mr. Borison's family made pocket protectors.
Oh, that might be, you know, that would explain a lot, because,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
honestly,
my father was an engineer.
One thing I noticed.
And he always wore a Borison pocket protector. Absolutely.
He wore a Borison.
Yeah, it's a family business. Family business, the Borison pocket protector.
I guess one thing I've noticed over the years, and I guess nobody wears pocket protectors anymore.
The Borisons do.
But pocket protectors seem to have been worn exclusively by people who wore shirts that were not worthy of that kind of protection.
Yeah. I don't know if I agree with that. Nobody wants a pen stain on the corner of their pocket.
I guess that's right.
Yeah.
Nobody uses pens anymore anyway. All right. Well, there you go, Nate. There is eighth grade math in quarantine corner.
Oh, that was fantastic. Wait a minute. I can't believe this. I thought for sure Colleen O'Hanley, we have another online bid. We have we have an auction going on here, Adam. Alice Walton, heirs to the Walton fortune, who created Crystal
Bridges. The Walmart fortune, yeah.
That's exactly right. Who created Crystal Bridges Art Museum in Bentonville, Arkansas, has now bid $25,000. Thank you, Alice.
Wow.
Thank you, Alice Walton. Yeah, I think Art Museum is a fantastic thing, and that's great, and thank you so much. For the bid, and so we will be.
And you know, and Colleen, I just want to say, Colleen, if you're listening and you've already outbid Alice once, I just want to quote Burgess Meredith, the beloved Mick from the Rocky movies, when I say, "Stay down, Colleen, stay down. You can't beat this woman. She'll knock you to tomorrow. Stay down."
It looks like we will be sending Alice Walton the uneaten bowl of rice that was offered to Gandhi during his final fast. And
politely demurred.
And demurred, exactly, politely. I want to reinforce in people's minds who Gandhi was. He said in speeches many times, particularly towards the end of his life, that the efforts to make India all Hindu was making Hindus barbaric. And I think that there's something for us all to think about there that doesn't just apply to India trying to make all of one kind of religious practitioner or all of one kind of... Oh, my God. Wait a minute.
Wow.
You're not going to believe this.
I wanted to add a fun fact to that.
Oh, sure.
Which is that I think one of Gandhi's most famous and longest hunger strikes was, in fact, for Hindu-Muslim unity.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Just to piggyback on what you were saying.
Yeah, exactly. And as the Hindus became more resistant sometimes, not all, of course, but as the resistant Hindus became more resistant to that idea, it pained Gandhi, and he made speech after speech talking about, well, exactly how far will you go for this? And how will that leave your religion? What kind of people would we be if
exactly. And he often ended those speeches by just remarking, wow, I could really go for a bowl of rice right now.
But he didn't. This rice, you can see, he hasn't even taken a bite out of this rice.
All right, so what's the news? You had news.
Well, here's the news. I Scott Franciscus, our benefactor, Scott Franciscus, has come in with a down-to-the-wire bid of $25,025.
Wow.
Scott wins the bowl of rice that Gandhi didn't
eat. That's not
eat.
The first auction he's won, is it?
No, this guy is going to have the best history museum. And, of course, our thanks and devotion, because listeners may know that Scott
is our alleged benefactor.
Scott is our benefactor. Tony, he won a bar of hotel
I'm
soap
alleged.
One time, and Tony Anita Hull went to send it to him, and she put it in an envelope.
She literally crammed a bar of soap into an envelope. I know we've mentioned that about 100 times,
but could have happened
I don't think
to anybody. It was
no.
Tony Anita Hull was trying to be frugal to save the show money, because the show makes no profit whatsoever. And so thank
that
you.
That is true, Mrs.
Thank
Culpepper.
Thank you, Tony and Anita. My thanks go out to Tony and Anita Hall and to Scott Franciscus for that tremendous bid on Gandhi's rice. So Scott Franciscus, the envelope arrived with the soap in it. What was it called? COD, right?
Cash. Yeah, yes.
Yeah. So Scott Franciscus had to pay.
It arrived postage due, I think, is it
right,
is
postage
it term.
Due. So he had to pay to receive his prize. And the guy has just been paying ever since, just really supporting the show. Thank you so much. Oh, my gosh. Adam, answer the phone.
Yeah, okay.
Adam, answer the phone.
What? Really?
Yeah.
I was hoping that we could kind of get to a break. Okay. Hello.
Hello, Adam. Am I the 100th caller?
No, I'm pretty sure you're caller number 68. Am I right? Tony Anita Hall?
She's actually 67. Gladie was 66. That was a mistake.
Oh, okay. So you're caller 67.
Oh, I'm 67. I'm that much closer. That's okay. I'm just glad to talk to you, Adam, in these difficult times. I was thinking that we could...
Hi, Winnie.
Hi, Adam. It's so nice to talk to you. I feel so isolated. I was thinking we could...
This is our caller, Winnie Rose Feynman, right?
It is me, Winnie Rose Feynman. And I was thinking that we could take a break from our grueling rehearsal schedule from my original production of my original play, Love Texts, which will be playing at the Herschel Bernardi Jr. Community Theater in Huntington, New York, as soon as is possible. But, Adam, I feel that we need to regroup and put some emphasis, however, on our mental health. Your negativity must be making the crisis even more difficult for you. So
my negativity?
You're often quite negative, Adam, and I think everyone has noticed that. My mother, for example, really finds you very negative, and she wants a crockpot back.
I didn't get your crockpot.
I sent it to you, Adam, and you have the crock pot. You know you have the crock pot. And don't bother giving it back.
Don't...
It's slathered in COVID-19 right now. I know it is. Just keep the crock pot.
What are you calling about, Winnie?
I would like to help you, Adam. Nothing would make me happier than helping you. I would like to help you with some power of positive thinking. That's what I would like to help with.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm all ears. How would you like to increase my positivity?
Well, I would like you to repeat these phrases as often as you can. I can do it. That's an important one.
I can do it.
Yeah. I can do it if I want to. That's important.
I can do it if I want to.
Oh, this is very good. I can if I try hard.
I can if I try hard.
April showers bring May flowers.
Okay. April showers bring May flowers.
There's a light. No, wait. There's a silver lining at the end of the tunnel.
I don't even think that's the phrase, Winnie.
There's a silver lining at the end of the tunnel.
No, Winnie, the phrase is every cloud has a silver lining. I can't let you slip that one by me. It makes no sense to say that there's a silver lining at the end of the tunnel. Then you just bang into a lining.
See, with the negativity again.
No. I'm saying that you created sort of a mishmash of two different positive thinking things. One is every cloud has a silver lining, and one is there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
This is not insuperable,
but you put
Adam.
Them both together and created a nonsensical stew.
Well, I don't want to aim too high. You're in the tunnel. Maybe you don't get out of the tunnel, but towards the end, there's a silver lining. It's nice. I can do it if I want to. If I try hard, I'll get there. April showers bring May flowers. I'm good enough.
Okay.
I gotta go, Adam. I gotta go.
Okay, well, thank you for calling, Winnie.
It was so good to talk to you. Maybe next week we'll hoist some more.
Thank you, Winnie.
It's good talking. talking to you.
Oh, my.
She really loves you, Adam. She loves you. I've never.
Yeah, she really does.
You know, you can feel the anguish and pain in her heart when she talks. You know.
All right. We'll be back with more Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone after this. Fun fact, the oldest person ever to have lived was a French woman named Jean-Louise Comont. She was 122 years old when she died in 1997, and her final words were, "I don't care if tourists like it. That newfangled tower is still blocking my view." Welcome back. Hey, speaking of hotel soaps, we want to hear from all you nobodies, particularly right now, because you're our connection to the world.
You are.
Please email us at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com if you want to submit something to our theme song contest or a vocabulary song. Feel free to send those in.
Hey, Adam, you know the other thing we want is a brief but compelling description of the show. We love them to go up on the homepage of my new website, which is up. And my store is still open. It's right there at paulapoundstone.com. You can get the Poundstone Pussy Pillows, which are cat toys, or my remarkably soft tri-poly blend t-shirts with a self-portrait on the left breast and a memorable quote on the back. And you know, now might be a very good time to grab a copy of my book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness, and the rest of my books and CDs.
Wow. Yeah, I would say people should pick that up. And you know what? If you like to read a book, you might want my novel Schrodinger's Ball, which you can still get at Amazon, or my graphic novel series from Marvel Comics, The Skrull Kill Crew. Both are available.
You can find me and Adam on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and check out our Facebook page at Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Oh, man, who'd have thought we'd get here, but that's our show. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam the Felber, produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam that same Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hull. Special thanks to our guest, Raymond. Last name deleted.
Thank you, Raymond.
Thank you, Raymond. And thanks to tonight's house band, Nobody, Adam Sartain.
Thank you, Adam Sartain.
Mixing by Michael Hoagie, Starburns production by Land Romo, technical direction by Jessica Gutierrez. Transcription services for the show provided by TranscribeMe, a premier internationally used transcription service. Use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at transcribeme.com to receive an expedited service.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
A bowl of rice?
Yeah, yeah. Never, not even touched by Gandhi.
Well, yeah, doesn't that decrease its value? It's like it's never been touched by him. It's just an old bowl of rice.
No, it's not. It was offered to him by his, you know, by the people that, you know, surrounded him lovingly.
Do we know who offered it to him?
I you know what? I have it written down, but I don't remember. It was a woman. It was a woman that came from,
a woman.
It was a woman that came from it was the photographer woman.
Minneapolis? A photographer.
Yeah. Yeah. And she
was she sharing it?
No, she was offering it to him because she was concerned, but
yeah, but she could.
But
she wasn't just like, "Hey, I'm having rice, do you want some?"
You're viewing Gandhi as a picky eater. He was a historic figure.
Yeah, but inarguably a picky eater.
No. No. Not true. Not true at all.
Starburns Audio, a podcast. A podcast network.